All right, good morning. Happy Thursday. I'm going to call today's meeting of the Capital Investment Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 13th, the day before the biggest Hallmark holiday we have, which is tomorrow. Let's see here. So we've got a full agenda on deck, and we do have a quorum. And if I could have Representative Perez Vega approve the minutes from Tuesday, February 11th.
I approve.
Fantastic. Minutes are approved. Members, let's start today's exciting hearing with the Department of Natural Resources. We have Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer and the Capital Asset Manager Samantha Minkler here today to present on our favorite department, the Department of the DNR. So continue on.
Madam Chair, members, well, I thank you for those kind words. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, DNR, and I do have with us today Samantha Minkler, our Capital Asset Manager, who many of you probably know. She does coordinate and help work with the committee on tours and all of those fun things as you're out seeing projects. So she does run our Capital Asset Program. So I'm going to turn it over to her, and she's going to run us through the slides. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Samantha Minkler, Capital Asset Manager. Thanks for the opportunity to present our budget today. I'll first get started with a little overview of our assets, and then I'll move on to the budget presentation. The DNR manages and maintains public land and infrastructure on behalf of Minnesotans, providing countless benefits to our state. Our assets serve Minnesotans across the state and are part of the fabric of communities. Caring for these assets requires a systematic and comprehensive approach. The infrastructure programs and projects in our bonding proposal contribute in direct and dynamic ways towards advancing our agency mission, which is to work with Minnesotans to conserve and manage the state's natural resources, to provide outdoor recreation opportunities, and to provide for commercial uses of natural resources in a way that creates a sustainable quality of life. DNR assets are diverse and unlike unlike many other state assets. Some of our assets include the state park campground or cabin where Minnesotans spend their summer vacations, host family reunions, picnics, school trips, weddings, meetups for hiking, bird watching, winter activities, and the list goes on. There's also the public fishing pier, where a child catches their first fish, and the fish hatchery, where that fish is raised for stocking. There's the native prairie that supports pheasants, songbirds, and pollinators, while improving water quality and capturing carbon. There's the state forest and the roads that provide access to them, that support wildlife habitat, recreation, climate mitigation, and the forest products economy. And, of course, there's the DNR offices where people can buy a fishing license, submit permit applications, or get information about natural resources in their community. And we have many other asset types. In addition to the diverse asset types, our assets are extensive and geographically dispersed across all 87 counties and 5.6 million acres of land. DNR-built assets have a current replacement value of $3.5 billion. Stewardship of these assets requires ongoing repair, renovation, and replacement. We have a deferred maintenance challenge. The number, variety, condition, and age of DNR facilities all contribute to a significant capital need for asset preservation. As you can see in this graph, asset preservation appropriations, which are shown by the blue line at the bottom, have been far short of what was needed to address the deferred maintenance backlog, shown by the green bar, is increasing over time. As a result, the deferred maintenance challenge keeps growing. Nearly one in four buildings are in unacceptable or poor condition. Only one in four buildings meet today's design standards, including accessibility, and nearly one in three buildings are over 80 years old. In 2025, we're looking to continue to address these deferred maintenance needs and make other targeted and community investments. Given DNR's size and scope of custodial responsibilities, it is necessary to strike a balance between system-wide programmatic investments and targeted projects and community investments. This systematic approach focuses on prioritizing the greatest needs and efficiently completing capital investment projects. Our 2025 bonding request is grouped in these categories, and the projects are listed here in priority order. We'll go through each project in more detail next. In 2025, natural resources asset preservation remains our top capital investment priority. We request $61 million for projects including repair, renovation, or replacement of degrading or failing infrastructure. Our NRAP infrastructure categories include building and site infrastructure, water and wastewater systems, roads, trails, and bridges, public water access sites, camping infrastructure, fish hatcheries, and water control structures. Asset preservation investments ensure that our infrastructure is safe and functional for the public, supports conservation of Minnesota's natural resources, and preserves the state's investments in its capital assets. We consider design factors such as accessibility, energy efficiency, and climate resiliency in this work. Next, we request $11.1 million for the Betterment of Buildings program. Our top priority for this program is adding needed storage capacity and examination facilities for mineral exploration samples at the Hibbing Drill Corps Library. This project is design complete and ready for bidding. Betterment is an important complement to asset preservation funding. While asset preservation addresses the backlog of deferred maintenance and affects the safety, usability, and effectiveness of DNR-managed facilities and infrastructure, Betterment funding allows for the substantial improvement or addition to or replacement of buildings that fail to meet current needs or have reached the end of their useful life. These programs together are critical to address our substantial infrastructure needs. We'll also note that in this category, we still have significant needs for funding to construct a plug seedling facility at the State Forest Nursery, for high priority replacements of unsafe or inadequate DNR offices and storage spaces, and to construct new or significantly modernized visitor centers, picnic shelters, trail centers, camper cabins, and shower buildings at our state parks. Next is our acquisition and betterment of public lands program. The 2025 capital request of $6.5 million focuses on reforestation and other land improvement efforts, enhancing access, quality, and safety of DNR-managed state lands, and acquisition of strategic high-priority inholdings and parcels. Capital funding for public lands improves and conserves Minnesota's natural heritage, enriches public outdoor recreational opportunities, and provides for sustainable commercial uses of natural resources. This also contributes to climate mitigation and adaptation goals as well. Our next project is improving accessibility of DNR-managed lands and facilities. Our 2025 request of $1.9 million will allow us to continue to make progress to provide more comprehensive accessibility improvements at state parks and recreation areas and high visitation wildlife management areas. Comprehensive accessibility improvements help advance DNR's strategic priorities of connecting people to the outdoors and expanding diversity, equity, and inclusion. These types of improvements may include improving the accessibility of bathrooms, parking areas, showers, campsites, trails, day use areas, interpretive facilities, and hunting blinds, providing new amenities to meet the needs of an increasingly diverse user base with a variety of physical abilities and skills, and improving signage and interpretive exhibits when part of a larger renovation effort. And then finally, we have our community investment projects. In our 2025 request, we request $10 million for the Dam Safety Grant Program to fund rapid and dam recovery efforts, including stabilization of the steep, unsafe riverbank. We also request $5.6 million for the Flood Hazard Mitigation Grant Program. This program provides cost-share grants to local governments, including cities, counties, and watershed districts, for projects that reduce flood risk. This funding is critical in the face of a changing climate. And last, $1.9 million for the Parks and Trails Local and Regional Grant Program, which provides competitive grants to local governments for acquisition and development of local parks and trails across Minnesota. These grant programs allow DNR to partner with local communities to acquire land and develop parks and trails that help create a network of close-to-home recreational facilities. And again, we'd just like to highlight that DNR capital investment funding is put to good use. We utilize an efficient and effective capital asset management program to deploy the funding we receive toward the highest priority preservation and improvement projects across Minnesota. As you can see here, our 2023 NRAP projects are underway in communities across Minnesota. And our list of highest priority needs is regularly updated based on the latest information. In this way, new events such as unexpected failure of building components or storm damage can be addressed. Regular and consistent capital investment funding is essential to the success of our asset management program and will help us tackle the backlog of deferred maintenance over the years to come. In summary, the DNR's 2025 bonding request will help us maintain and preserve the essential natural resources infrastructure that benefits Minnesotans across the state. Our proposal focuses on taking care of what we have while advancing strategic priorities to serve current and future generations. Thank you, and we'll take any questions.
Thank you for the presentation. We have Representative Scraba with some riveting questions.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Minkler. I got a bunch of questions, but one of the first things that y'all, and thank you for everything. I mean, this is where the people see all these different projects. One of the underlying questions I have is how much of these, of this gets matched with legacy money or do you try to coordinate these projects together if the DNR gets funding from on any of these?
Commissioner?
Chair, Representative Scraba. There is some overlap in certain areas where we look at outdoor recreation. As you know, Legacy has specific criteria in different categories. Certainly the Outdoor Heritage Fund is not applicable to many of our bonding projects. But what we did and what we tried to do is leverage those dollars where possible together. We can provide examples of where we've done that. It's very limited where those circles intersect, but there is some cross-pollinization. I know we talked about that with our Get Out More proposal with Chairman Lee at the time in the legislature on how those dollars intersected, and I should say Representative Leon Lilly as well, and Representative Hansen when we were putting that proposal together, and how those dollars all fit together. So we can provide more detail for you on specifics with that.
Thank you, Chair. Also,
Representative Scraba.
This past summer, we had a lot of floods. I mean, I'm looking at your pictures, and did you take advantage of those dollars that came from the federal government on our trails and that to maximize this or fix projects that were? Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Binkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Scraba. Yes, we're working with, we have a disaster recovery program that is working on those FEMA reimbursements now.
Okay, I know in
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know in northern Minnesota we had a few washouts, and timeliness is everything, especially on the North Shore. I have a lot of constituents. Their businesses run on days, not years, and the more days that are shut down because of trail damage or whatever, you know, to get at it faster is better. And I know I'm dealing with MnDOT on a lot of these issues too. It's like, come on, folks, these are emergencies. It may not seem like an emergency, but when you own the only bar around and no one can get to it, you have zero income. And it's like, we need to get our food out. We need to do this. So, and when I call the local DNR folks, hey, can we get this expedited? I always run into the, well, you know, it's got to go through the system. And I'm just curious if you guys are trying to maximize, you know, like we gave you money for specific projects, but do you try to move money around to help? Or thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner Meyer.
Representative Scraba, that's a great example. I spent personally a lot of time with counties in your district, St. Louis County and others, during that flood event on daily calls, making sure that the assets were protected and improved as much as we could. Forest roads you're talking about primarily, and our forestry division and our operations services folks got out there right away. When it's life safety and those types of things, yep, the money comes secondary. It's making sure the assets are protected, people are able to get in and out of their homes, ambulances can get there and things like that. So that was a huge priority for us. And then we go back and seek reimbursement from FEMA. So we take that very seriously.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. The other issue, the Hibbing Drocourt Library, if you could give a little more detail where we are on that. You know, I thought we funded a lot of that. I'm not sure what happened. Representative Hanson, remember, we kind of prioritized this. I'm just curious where it's at. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Mickler?
Madam Chair, Representative Scraba, we have not funded the new construction of the fourth storage building, and that project is designed and complete, and we're ready to go out for construction bidding once we receive the funding.
Okay. I apologize, but I thought we had funded the whole bit. If I may defer to Representative Hanson.
Okay, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Scraba. We did a million emergency to stabilize the shelving so that the heavy cores would not collapse and be destroyed, and that history would be destroyed. So that was an emergency $1 million appropriation general fund. And then I think we had these proposals for the building design and pre-design before. If my memory is correct, Mr. Commissioner Meyer could maybe correct me.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner.
Representative Hanson, Representative Scraba, thank you for that. And that is exactly what happened. I know some people have been to this facility on tours before, but if you ever get a chance, please stop there. I talk about it as a geologist's dream come true. The geological history that's contained in that building, people come from all over the world to see. The challenge is it's really heavy, right? The core is about 2 inches in diameter, and it stacks up, so it's the shelves were starting to fail. We appreciate the emergency funding to do that, but we do have designs ready to go. It needs to be built. It needs to be expanded, and this would be an example of a project that would start upon funding being available. So,
right, and Representative Scraba, we did that tour, and then last year we did not do a bonding bill, so puts us back in why they're probably in front of us again.
And Madam Chair, I'm starting to recall now, this is going to be the extension in the back of the building. Was that the intent to go back? Because right now it's literally out of room, and this is going to have a new area for folks to come in and look at. They're building everything into it. This is okay. Now I keep looking at the other building that's really old in my mind down the hill from there, and I thought we were working on that. Okay, now I'm remembering. So this is going to be the drawings you've got.
As Celine Dion would say, it's all coming back to me now.
Madam Chair, we can provide the plans and drawings that we have for the facility to Representative Scraba and the committee if you'd like.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Scraba?
Yeah, and sorry I'm hogging all the time here. But
no, we love the DNR, and I'm sure we've got plenty more questions for the DNR. Next up, we have Representative Ryer.
I'm sorry.
Hold on.
I do have a couple more.
Representative
Scraba. We have plenty of time, I know. And one of the things, that, Madam Chair, to whomever, one of you two, there's $6.5 million for acquisition and betterment of public lands, and you show all the planting in that. As someone who uses the forest, and I do support all the logging and everything, but I think the aspen brings more of what we need, and I see all the pines here, and they're all beautiful and pretty and everything, but the animals don't tend to congregate around mature pine forests. They tend to congregate around other forests, but, you know, I'm just curious, is there a priority of where your plantings are or what your...
Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Representative Scraba, our reforestation program is required by statute to reforest after final harvest, so that kind of follows our management plans. So where we reforest, and some of these examples are where final harvest has been completed on state forest land. The aspen regeneration, as you know, occurs naturally, just it regenerates itself through the root system. So we don't need to regenerate our aspen, but make sure that our forests are resilient and we're growing the trees, we're planting trees that will be able to grow for the next 50 to 100 years. Is really what's so important to us. That's why our nursery system is so important, not only for the conifers that we grow, but also for hardwoods and other species that we need to plant as well.
Thank you, Commissioner, and I'm sure Representative Hansen is thrilled to hear that, too. He's a big tree fan. Representative Scraba, do you have another question?
And a final comment. On all my goings about in my district that I represent, one of the issues that keeps coming up are, you know, the deer. How come there's less and less, and the predation from the wolves? And one of the forest managers for one of the companies brought up a really good point about managing our forests, how much space, the way we used to cut, and maybe we re-look at the wildlife as being part of our cutting plan instead of just the trees. Look at the deer need more area, because if you leave just a small area for the deer to winter in, the wolves and the other predators have an advantage to it. If you leave a larger area, there's less predation. This is coming from a tree manager saying, you know, we've noticed this difference. So I don't know if you all talk to each other and try to get these ideas around. I think as we progress, our humans, we start understanding these larger ecosystems, that we can start taking these ideas and using them for management. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. And we're going to try this again. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. And my question is for Ms. Minkler. I like seeing that you have $1.9 million for improving accessibility. Making sure that everyone can get out and enjoy nature is really important to physical and mental health. I'm curious, if you were to go to full accessibility, what's the backlog? How far does 1.9 million get us when you look at the need?
Ms. Minkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Ryer, thank you for the question. And that's a really good point, that we have wide-ranging accessibility needs across our infrastructure portfolio. So the 1.9 million will help us in some of the cases where we have comprehensive accessibility assessments completed and projects planned that need additional funding. But realistically, we're looking at about 25 million per bonding cycle would be the ideal amount of funding for making a significant improvement towards accessibility on our infrastructure.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A separate question, if I may.
Absolutely.
Moving from accessibility to trees, in a past bonding tour, I was just so struck by the need of the Bedora Tree Nursery, and I'm wondering where that fits in the priority, because if you haven't seen it, it's a masterpiece of paperwork and manual processes that works. But it's really a precious resource, so I'm curious where that stands.
Ms. Minkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Ryer. Yes, thank you so much for pointing that out as well. For the betterment of buildings request, as we mentioned today, the Jill Core Library is our top priority, and then right below that, we're looking for funding for the next, the final phase of expansion and modernization of the State Forest Nursery. And so we were very thankful to receive the $10 million in 2023 for the phase two of the renovation of the packing facility. And so, yes, we're very much looking forward to future funding of betterment of buildings for the State Forest Nursery.
So back to the Drill Corps Library, the $11.1 million, is that you need that all up front, or can we do that in a couple of phases?
Madam Chair, yes. The total project cost is going to be near, is probably a little bit over $11.1 million. So we would need that all at once. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And following up on Representative Ryer, so I wasn't clear for the money that we did provide to Bedora. Has that been spent?
Ms. Minkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, the 2023 Bedora funding, we have the pre-design for that project underway, which will then go to design and construction. So the design funding is encumbered, and then once that's complete, we'll be able to go to construction.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then following up on appropriations that were through bonding for trees, could you maybe give us a status of where those appropriations are with for tree planting, reforestation, appropriations that we provided in 2023 and 2024.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Meyer.
Representative Hansen, I believe you're talking about some grant funding that we were provided. We did the first round. There was a legislative inquiry to the Office of the Legislative Auditor about some criteria that we had developed based upon the language in the bill. So until we receive that review from the Legislative Auditor, those grants are on hold.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I believe it was 2022, there was a deal with when we were providing drought aid to farmers, that there was drought aid for forestry for trees that were dying with that drought. And I think the governor's budget proposed is cutting that $4 million. Could you maybe give us an update on that and if any of that wasn't spent as well?
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, first of all, thank you for getting those funds for us. You were a champion and we really appreciated that. What we found is that, and it kind of ties into to Representative Ryer's comments or questions, is those dollars were eligible for state, county, tribal, and other local units of government that had planted trees that had died during the drought. The state, we plant the plugs, not the plugs, but the bare root seedlings that we grow up, Adora, that you saw in the picture. Many of our other partners in conservation use plugs, or what you see is a little dirt around it in a plastic or a styrofoam container. And those survived the drought much better. So while we offered the funds to folks, they didn't need those dollars. We were looking at possibly trying to repurpose them for Bedora or General Andrews, but the need through the governor's budget was higher to take those dollars back and put them back to general fund. So we spent about a little over $1 million. I think it's like 3.88 or 3.98 that is in the governor's budget to be unallotted.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, the tree need is still there. We have a lot of boulevard trees that came down. Is there an ability with that appropriation? Is it flexible enough where you could go to the private market to purchase the trees, or the cities could go to the private market for reimbursement for tree replacement for drought damaged trees?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, I would have to go back and look at the appropriation language. It's for specifically trees that were impacted from the drought, and we did offer those funds available in a round that was publicized, and we can look and see if there's any desire for those as well, but it was rather limited with the language. So.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate your time for being here today. I guess looking through your information here, 5.6 million acres of land. Kind of amazing, isn't it? Makes you what? Number one landowner in the state of Minnesota? Next to Potlatch?
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, the federal government is right up there as well. I must say that out of that 5.6 million, 2.3 million are state forests or school trust fund lands that are used to generate dollars for the education system that go to the permanent school trust fund. There's 1.8 million acres of wildlife management areas that provide outdoor recreation and hunting. There's parks and trails. There's scientific and natural areas. So it is a mix of land holdings that the state has.
116,000 acres in the wilderness area, too.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just keep seeming to find more acres of ground. Question for you. Over the last year, how many acres of land did you acquire?
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Allen, we'll have to get back to you on that. There's all sorts of processes through acquisition. There are partners who acquire land and donate it to the state. We, I think the major pieces that we bought were in conjunction with partners in St. Louis County with some forested land that previously was owned by Potlatch to make sure that that land continues to be productive and provide not only outdoor recreation but a fiber source for the markets in Representative Scrappa's district and others.
Representative Allen.
Madam Chair, thank you for this. I was just kind of wondering, who are the partners that you are working with in order to acquire land?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Allen, primarily with the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We work with Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, Conservation Minnesota, and I shouldn't say Conservation Minnesota, Trust for Public Land. other folks, Conservation Fund, I should say.
Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very, very interesting. I'm just kind of wondering, it'd be interesting to see exactly how much deeded acres have been given over to you over the last 2-year period of time, actually, and how much of how many of those acres are coming out of production. Do you have any idea the amount of property taxes it's taking out of the local communities? These kind of property taxes are kind of important for being able to maintain schools, bridges, township roads.
Commissioner.
Chair, Representative, I can certainly get that information for you. I will also note the payment in lieu of taxes program. It has been noted sometimes is often higher than the property taxes that the counties and local taxing districts were receiving for those lands. And that payment in lieu of taxes program, the legislature has increased those funds in the past couple of years as well. So the counties are getting reimbursed, but I can certainly provide that information for you. And as far as productive land, we do not, as a rule, buy land that's in production. We will buy land from willing sellers. People like to have a legacy. A lot of landowners that we have purchased land from want their land to be public forever. So we work with those folks as well.
Representative Allen.
Thank you for this, Madam Chair. More of a pointed question. Is it typical of the DNR to deny the ability for landowners to be able to put berms on the backside of their property and then come back like a year or two later and offer to purchase the ground?
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative, I would need to have more information on the specific situation you're talking about. We do not do that as a practice.
Representative Allen.
Some people I have gotten to know very well over the last few years down in an area called Cooks Valley over by Wabasha got to experience this firsthand through the DNR. And it would be interesting to get a little bit of information about how often situations like this happen and exactly what the details of those kinds of situations are. I wanted to stem into another question about nursery work that you guys do with your trees and whatnot. Are you guys doing that internally, or are you guys hiring that externally to be able to produce the trees you guys are using for replanting?
Representative or Commissioner Meyer, sorry, I keep downgrading your title there.
Madam Chair, Representative Allen, a mix. Right now, we grow what trees we can. Most of the trees that we source out actually come from Canada because there are no local producers that are willing to provide that source for us. So that's one of the reasons why we would like to get into the production of plugs rather than have our money go to a company outside or an organization outside of the state of Minnesota. We think we could provide jobs and grow just better trees here, frankly. So,
Representative Allen?
No, thank you for that. It's an important thing that I've seen going on a regular basis. Had an opportunity to be able to tour Potlatch and see the extensive work they were doing in terms of replanting and producing their own trees and or stock to be able to replant in a lot of their situations. Going over to the Hibbing Drill Corps Library with the added storage, I couldn't agree with you more on it. It's an incredibly important thing, especially as we're looking at mineral exploration and understanding soil type and whatnot. I come from a farming background, attended the University of Minnesota, understand this very well. I was just wondering, do you have any outside relationships with University of Minnesota, other research institutions that are currently coming in and utilizing some of the soil core data that you're collecting?
Commissioner Meyer.
Hey, Representative, we work very closely with the higher education institutions within the state. I'm not sure what kind of relationships you'd be referring to.
Representative Allen.
Just along the lines of like research that they're currently doing in terms of trying to maintain keeping an eye on the different soil types and whatnot and the layering effect that they have within the soil profile and whatnot. And I was just wondering, is it specifically for this area? Are you housing it for statewide at this site?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Allen. So the material that we store there is actually the drill core, the rock. There is no soil. There's no overburden that is collected there. So we're just looking at the hard rock. And we have done some work, core scan, for example, working with USGS and other folks where they have a technology where they actually scan it digitally. But that just looks at the outside. People want to look at the inside as well and utilize that. Sometimes they take a sample and grind it up, do some assays on it and things like that. So obviously it's an important educational asset, and we want people to utilize it. So,
Commissioner, quite a few of these members on our committee do not exactly know what the drill core is for or used for. Do you want to just spend a couple of moments explaining?
Madam Chair, sure. By state statute, companies who are doing exploratory boring are required to provide to us deposit a piece of that core as we get it. What it is used for is actually we store it as a geological history of what we're learning. People come in, as I said, from all over the country and all over the world to look at this. And actually, the work that has been done there has led to some of the other findings that we have seen throughout the state for mineral resources and development.
Great. Thank you for that. Does anybody else have any further questions? No one? All right, members. Yeah, we are going to take about a few minute recess. What do we have? No? Okay. Please do not interrupt me. We're going to take a couple minute recess while we wait for Bowser to get here. Thank you for presenting. Oh, is Bowser is here? Oh, you are here early. Okay, great. See, gee whiz. I know, I like recess too.
Madam Chair, members, thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, we have Bowser. We have the Executive Director, John, and I'll let you pronounce your last name so I can learn that too. And then we have Assistant Director Andrea Fish.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
I'm John Jasky, Executive Director with the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser, as you described it. And with me is Assistant Director Andrea Fish. Thank you for the opportunity this morning to overview our capital investment items as recommended by the governor. And as soon as this thing is ready to roll, okay. You should have a handout also, Madam Chair and members with you, so we can walk through that as well. Our agency is set up to work across the state, and both of these you'll see are statewide programs that have had in the past and will continue to have opportunities for capital investments all across our state and all of our counties. With that, I will get into the first of those. Oops, is it going? Oh, there it is. I guess we have our mission first, which you can read here, which I just described. We work on our landscapes that are in private ownership. And of course, you heard, just heard from the DNR, of course, are the ones that cover most of our public landscapes. We work with private landowners to do projects that will provide this public benefit. We do this with something known as a conservation easement, and that conservation easement authority is in state statute. It has a name as well, or it's called Reinvest in Minnesota, or RIM. That program has been around since the late 1980s, and we use it to accomplish those conservation easements, and we also have been in the last several years particularly, and hopefully continuing ahead, able to leverage federal funding to go with a lot of these projects. I'm hitting the wrong button. The two items that we're going to talk to you about are these ones that I just mentioned. The local government roads replacement program, which Ms. Fish will describe, is a similar endeavor in that we are acquiring conservation easements on these private lands for public benefit. And you'll hear the basis for that, again, a statutory underpinning to it. We use some of the same techniques, but we do not use our Reinvest in Minnesota program, and it is not tied to federal leveraging, but it is tied to federal permitting authorities that are also are important to local road authorities. So with that, we will go into the first of these two items.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Andrea Fish. I'm an assistant director at the Board of Water and Soil Resources. As Director Jasky mentioned, I am here today to present the Local Government Roads Wetland Replacement Program ask in front of us. This is a statutorily mandated program that is administered by Bowser across the state of Minnesota. In cases where local government road projects would interfere, impede, or necessarily go over a wetland, an existing wetland. They are required to replace those wetland acres within the state. Instead of having that done locally on a smaller basis, it's more efficient between both permitting and cost effectiveness to have that managed at the statewide level. And Bowser is the agency that oversees this program. We do this through a number of bank service areas within the state of Minnesota. So there's regional application to the program so that wetlands are replaced ideally within the location from which they were otherwise impacted by the local road project. Some of our bank service areas in the state of Minnesota have less than 1 year's anticipated need for local government road wetland credits. In these cases, local governments are able to purchase credits from a different bank service area, but it is at a higher cost. So we're trying to make sure that there is a reliable source of wetland credits across the state and within each bank service area. For the credits themselves, it can take a number of years to create and utilize the credit, generally 8 to 10 years between identifying an appropriate project, designing, approving, and constructing that wetland replacement project, and then monitoring it and releasing those credits. Ideally, we want to have 8 to 10 years of known credits available going forward because both the local road projects themselves and the credit process can take so many years. It's important to our local government partners that they have a reliable source for these credits. I did want to note that in the last few years, there has been a lot of questions around the local government roads program, the funding source, the stability of the program. And last year, a work group was convened with a number of local governments and stakeholder groups to talk through what we're facing and the opportunities that are in front of us. And I do believe the committee has access to some findings from that group. And there is also a fuller report that's available on the Bowser website. A lot of them shared the concerns about having something that is stable and reliable for the foreseeable future with this program.
Madam Chair, members, we can pause there if there are any questions. Otherwise, we can keep going and we can take questions whenever you'd like to take.
Continue on.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. As Ms. Finch indicated, the previous item we walked you through is a regulatory directive to the state on behalf of local road authorities, and the report that was completed this past year, late last year, among that group that she just described, indicates the big issue is not the underpinnings of the program, but simply the need to have a reliable funding stream, because it otherwise puts those local road projects in jeopardy of not being able to comply with their permit conditions from either the federal or state or other authorities. This program is about the Reinvest in Minnesota, or CREP, as I referred to it earlier, because of the federal connection that we have. We use, again, a state conservation easement to do that. These projects are, many of them, or most of them, are wetland restorations, and they include, you know, these other ancillary benefits that you described or are described here that provide flood control, water quality benefits, habitat, et cetera, in each and every case. One of the important things that just happened is that this agreement that we have with the USDA was recently extended and amended to give us more opportunities in Minnesota. You can see here, this shows the in the gray areas, the additional parts of Minnesota that were added, which now includes all of Minnesota that is in a county area that has more than 30% agriculture, because this program is targeted at these marginal agricultural lands and putting back the wetlands that were once in those locations. We're adding those 12 counties, as you can see here. We're also increasing the amount of acres that can be enrolled under the agreement, and we're about halfway through this agreement in terms of the acres that have been enrolled so far. We are also including a practice that allows us to identify locations that will provide protection to private well water quality concerns. We previously had the ability to do this, but only in the areas that had a public water well supply. And so this will give us more flexibility to target those areas that are also causing difficulties with the water quality in the private wells. And you can see here that the federal state leveraging ratio has been updated to provide, in essence, a 7-to-3 ratio. So for every $3 we would provide from the state side, we would get $7 of a federal contribution that would, again, be put together with these federal and state dollars to acquire these permanent conservation easements. In the past, you can see here's the various funding streams that have been used, and this, you know, in the last 7-8 years has resulted in the $175 million the state has put into this have brought us about double that, about $350 million of federal funding. Again, this program is authorized in the federal farm bill, which is, in, you know, of course, in the process of being renewed or getting to the point of being renewed. And once that happens, this program will be available as it has been for the last 7 or 8 years in Minnesota. Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to overview our two items that have been recommended by the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Jaski, correct?
Correct, okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And going back to the first issue, the wetland road replacement, how does that interact with the new greenhouse gas mitigation standards? Can we get a bonus mitigation for using this with that, if it's applicable?
Mr. Jaski?
The bonus part's kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Certainly, you know, and MPCA can speak to the greenhouse gas report information more explicitly than we can. We were a part of it, as well as the other agencies that through the climate framework. The transportation, of course, is a component of that, right? We know that. What this program is really about is dealing with road upgrades for safety purposes, first and foremost, not so much for the other things. And to do that, you know, you have to get a permit because you're affecting a wetland, as these pictures show. And rather than, you know, having that local road authority try to find their own wetland mitigation site, sometimes even just in the road right of way, which is either expensive or not ideally ecologically either, this puts all of that into a bigger effort to put all those little impacts into one process where we can mitigate them in a site that's going to provide much more ecological benefit and more, you know, efficiencies for money, but also probably more efficiencies for reduced greenhouse gases, because you won't have as many projects being done and machinery and things using it to get that done. But that's not the primary purpose.
Okay. Thank you for that, Mr. Jaski. Representative, he spoke a lot. Lee Fu. I'm sorry, Lead Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a request, can you share with members of the committee the result of the work groups and some of the findings that they have provided for you? Thank you.
Who would like to take that one?
Madam Chair, Representative Lee. I believe that the report is included in the committee documents for today, or at least the findings. The key findings were truly that out of a number of analyzed opportunities to fund this statutory program, the end result was really that the group thought the existing mechanism of using state bonds was probably the best, provided it continued to be stable, and that it not, you know, years without bonding can definitely impact not just the program itself, but local governments deciding how to move forward with projects that they were planning for the long term. So there are other opportunities. I think a lot of them were outside of both the time constraints and the purview of this semi-formal work group that was convened to go over the program itself.
Thank you, Ms. Fish. Lead Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe just a comment for members of the committee, and I think for MnDOT, when they come before the committee, just trying to figure out what is the relationship between the amount of money that we have put into the local roads program and the need over here. And I think that will be helpful for us if we hear from MnDOT on that, you know, with the amount of appropriations we have put in, or there even more pressure on this or not. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and to represent Lee's question.
Mr. Jaski?
This was a joint endeavor with Bowser and MnDOT. Then we brought in all the stakeholders, which Ms. Fish described, of course, the rural authorities being the primary parties that were interested in that. And again, as she mentioned, it's not that there's anything wrong with the way this works. In fact, it's the best thing going. It's just that the ability to rely on a bonding bill passing and funding this is a concern because their permits are tied to that funding, which leads to those credits. And so if they don't get the funding, their Road Authority projects could be either delayed or stopped, and that's the real issue that they face.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Director Jaschke and Assistant Director Fish. So we keep having this problem year after year, or every 2 years, or every 3 or 4 years. So what if we tried something different? I mean, what if we had trunk highway bonds pay for this? Is there a different way, or we find some other way of having appropriation bonds or some type of thing so there's a consistent source of revenue rather than general obligation bonds or cash?
I actually appreciate that question, Representative Hansen, as we fall further and further behind in the state of Minnesota. We do have to think, I believe, other funding mechanisms for some of these programs. Who would like to take this?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Jaschke.
Representative Hansen, that is one of the things that was looked at in this report, as Ms. Fish indicated. And I think it might be useful to have, you know, we can't speak to the transportation bond authorities and how those are used. That's not something that we have a responsibility or connection to directly, but our sister agency, MnDOT, I'm sure would be able to speak to that, at least to either for themselves or on somewhat on behalf of the local road authorities as well. And you could also, I suppose, ask them to testify at some point on this topic, but we're not qualified to speak to it directly.
Okay, thank you. Any other further questions? Yes, Representative Scraba, how could I forget you?
Thank you, Chair. And whichever director wants to answer, I know the federal farm bill is a big Goliath, and I followed it for a while, and I kind of lost it. Is it closer? Is it going to happen, or is it just going to get kicked down the can down the road some more and more and more? And the reason I ask that is these are the kind of projects that if we need to advocate our local representatives in the federal government, like, hey, we need this farm bill. I know Senator Klobuchar's all about it. She's on it, and she wants to make it happen, but it doesn't happen. You know, like, what does it take to make this bill get through? Mm-hmm. And just your thoughts. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Jaschke, you may not have the answer, which is okay. I mean, sure. But
Representative Scrubby, I would agree with one thing, that it is a very, very important bill to get passed, not only for Minnesota, but for the whole country, right? And it's important that our food supply and all the other things that are part of that are assured for the future, right? And so I will say this, that in the past, there's been, you know, questions that you've asked in previous years, and there's been lots of, you know, questions about how they're going to get it done and when it's going to get done. And that's the same place we are now. And it has gotten done every year, or not every year, I'm sorry, every 5 years or every 6 years, depending on how long they extend it. But I know there's a great deal of discussion going on. I would encourage you to pass on your remarks to your federal cohorts and see what they can do about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. And if you need help knowing who your congressional person is, we can assist you with that. Does anyone else have any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for indulging me. So I just want to clarify, can you provide the report to the committee with my earlier request? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, co-lead Lee, yes, we can do that.
All right, and Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, so I was just wondering if you could just kind of maybe outside of this meeting, but give me a breakdown of what the difference is, because you get funding through bonding, you get funding through LCCMR, you get funding through the environment bill, you get funding through legacy and clean water and through Lessard SAM, which is part of legacy. Can you break that down for us either today or, and then explain to me what the differences are and why one, you know, why they're funded out of one area and what, you know, like your general operation and what projects are different between each of the funds? Because I believe the legacy money is supposed to be rather specific, but it seems like there's a little bit of slosh going on between the funds, and I realize you have to put things together, and you know, I'm not really questioning the work. I just kind of think the way the money moves around is a little squishy to me. Anyways, I'd like to have some more data for I think for all of us would be helpful.
Ms. Fish.
I'm just going to mention because I, again, thank you, Representative, for the question. Yes, we can do that. You know, the one thing I'll say about the legacy amendment, of course, is that it has to be, you know, supplemental to traditional sources. And both of these proposals that are in front of you have been traditional sources that have been accomplished through capital investment funds. So, but we can get you the history going back several years and show you what that looks like for sure.
And Mr. Jaskey, if you could provide that to the entire body, that would be great. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam
Great
Chair.
Question. All right. Any other questions for our two testifiers up front? Seeing none, all right. Well, I want to thank you, Mr. Jaskey and Ms. Fish, for presenting in front of us today. And we will now move on to the MPCA. You want to state your name for the body and present? That would be great.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Alexis Donath. I serve as legislative coordinator at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, and I lead our agency's legislative work with capital investment. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm joined today by Kurt Kudelka, Assistant Commissioner for Land and Strategic Initiatives, and Assistant Commissioner Dana Vander Bosch, who serves as Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy and Agriculture. The MPCA's capital budget is rooted in our agency's mission to protect and improve the environment and human health. Today we'll be talking through the MPCA's one item in the governor's capital investment budget, and we'll also be taking a couple of minutes to provide some background on a couple of other project types that come before the capital investment committee. We know there are some new members on the committee, and we wanted to give you the opportunity to understand those project types and ask your questions. I'll turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Kudelka.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Kirk Adelka. I'm Assistant Commissioner for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The program I'd like to start with is the Statewide Drinking Water Contamination and Mitigation for Private Wells program. This is a new program. Previously, the agency has come to the legislature on specific projects. Unfortunately, the risk and contamination of private wells has led to the situation where we have a number of projects and are starting to create a priority list just based on our investigations, and believe it's important to build a program to handle this moving forward. What we often see are contaminants such as PFAS and 1,4-dioxin in various types of private wells. This program would allow for the agency to work with communities, for instance, in a neighborhood to provide a neighborhood connection, so the main water line down the road, and then lateral connections that would connect to the home to provide a long-term source of drinking water. In the meantime, the agency is working to provide bottled water, but it will be more cost-effective and a better situation for the homeowners to have a long-term remedy in this situation. So the dollars would be using bonding dollars and cash dollars to be given to communities to do this work. I'll just note really quickly, you'll hear from PFA and Department of Health, and MPCA have partnered on another program that focuses directly on municipal drinking water systems, so these work in tandem. So I mentioned we're building a priority listing, and the next slide talks about our first priority, and which would be funded by the $8 million in the governor's bill. And this is the Red Oaks Phase 2 project. Some of you may be familiar with Red Oaks Phase 1. This was a connection of $6.1 million provided by the legislature to connect a neighborhood that had been impacted by 1,4-dioxin. The good news is the project is done, and all but one of the homeowners decided to connect to the water main that was built in, so we now have a long-term solution for these individuals. Unfortunately, the other half of this neighborhood, as we've done more investigation, is contaminated by PFAS, and over 40 homes are now impacted, and it would be more cost-effective to be able to provide them a connection to the city's drinking water system, which is not impacted by PFAS or 1,4-dioxin, long-term, instead of continuing to provide bottled water, which is inconvenient for the homeowner, but also the increased monitoring that would have to be done. Just want to touch a little bit on PFAS, because this is something that you will hear from us frequently in many different places. PFAS is a class of chemicals that is very unique, and what makes them very helpful in commerce also make them very difficult to deal with when in the environment. They have gotten the name forever chemicals because they do not naturally biodegrade. Once they're in the environment, they are there. They're also very small amounts are toxic over time, and they can build up, bioaccumulate in people. As a result, it's very difficult for us to destroy these unless we put in very expensive remediation systems or just be able to deal with a problem such as the drinking water. Unfortunately, we are never able to entirely clean these pollutants up when they're in the environment. So just a quick note again, at $8 million is the request from the governor's bonding bill, and this would go to that number one priority. In addition, we have policy language that we suggest to the legislature that would create a program to build this out into the future. One of the other items that the agency has historically come to the committee on, and you will get a number of very communities that are asking for these dollars, and so just is the capital assistance program. So we just wanted to spend a little bit of time to understand what this program is to help you as you get other requests into the future. So this is a statewide program that's been built for a number of decades to help local units of government with providing solid waste services. We have under the Waste Management Act a number of duties assigned to the counties. They really are implementing a lot of activities. And so they will, for instance, build a recycling center or a household hazardous waste facility or a reuse facility or a transfer station to get the waste to a dump, to a landfill or a waste energy facility. These dollars help build those projects across the state. It is based on a match program depending on the type of facility that's built. For instance, a reuse facility, which is more preferable under the state's Waste Management Act, would receive 75% from the state, 25% match from the local government. A household hazardous waste facility or recycling facility is a 50-50, and this is how we really incentivize to get those greater environmental and human health benefits as we move forward. We have built out a process, too, for this, and so our funding process is every 2 years we do put a request out to local governments to ask what type of projects are they looking to. In the solid waste realm, we have a 10-year solid waste planning process, and so the counties really look at that and see what type of investments are needed as they come up into the future. We then pull that together, look to make sure that it meets the eligibility requirements in statute and in rule, and then put together a priority list for the legislature to consider. We had done this 2 years ago. We are still using that list. We'll have our next time for asking for projects will be this spring in anticipation of the next bonding cycle. Thank you, Chair and Committee. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague for the rest.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dana Vanderbosch, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Water Policy and Agriculture at the MPCA. And I'd like to speak just very briefly about another bucket of funding that does not flow directly through the MPCA, but it's very important to the work that we do with communities and local governments throughout the state. The MPCA partners with the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority on funding for local governments to replace and upgrade wastewater and stormwater infrastructure projects. The PFA serves as the bank and administers the funding process itself and the loans and the grants. And I know that you're going to be hearing directly from the PFA next week, and so they can speak to the projects that they funded and the funding process itself. So I won't go into a lot of detail today, but I wanted to just say that we are very supportive of the bonding requests that they'll be coming forward with. But what I wanted to do is just spend a slide or so talking about the process that we use to work with those local governments on these proposed projects. The process starts with local governments applying to be included on the project priority list. There's a long ranked list of water infrastructure projects that communities need, wastewater, stormwater. There's also drinking water that's managed by the Department of Health, but there's a long list of prioritized projects. We review the applications and we score them to develop a ranked order. Inclusion on this list places projects in line to receive clean water state revolving fund financing. It can also unlock other funding sources, such as the Point Source Implementation Grant Program and the Water Infrastructure Grant Program. The scoring criteria are different depending on whether the project is an existing wastewater plant, an area that does not currently feed into a wastewater plant, so it's going to be sewered for the first time, or if it's a stormwater project. But all of the scoring criteria are really related to how the project relates to public health and environmental health. So for wastewater facilities, for example, the scoring criteria would consider if the facility is operating near capacity, how old is the facility, does the project currently have documented operational challenges, for example, is there bypassing or sewer overflows that are occurring at times, and does the plant discharge to a water body that is currently polluted or that's upstream of a drinking water source? So those are the different kinds of things that we consider as we're scoring and ranking wastewater projects. It's really important to emphasize the need for these dollars is great, and it's growing. The current project priority list includes 315 projects that total $3.4 billion in need. And the number has increased 113% over the last 5 years. The MPCA's legislative report on future wastewater infrastructure needs looks out even further. I believe it looks out 20 years. And over the next 20 years, there will be more than 800 projects that will be in line for money with an estimate of $6.5 billion in need. So it's really imperative that we continue to secure steady funding for these projects. We rely on the federal funding, but we also rely on the state match that largely comes from bonding. And the need is really only going to continue to grow, and communities around the state, particularly those with a limited tax base, really rely on this funding for critical improvements to their water infrastructure. And with that, again, thank you very much for inviting us to come in, and we'll stand for questions.
We have Representative Myers with a question. That's you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question I have is just because I've got a few cities that are, have some, rural water issues that they're trying to address and some of the projects they have over there. And I'm just wondering from the PPL list if you could provide a detailed list for that for the committee here.
Madam? Yes. I'm sorry. Could you pronounce your last name? It's Vanderbosch?
Vanderbosch.
Okay, Ms. Vanderbosch. Thank you.
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, we'd be happy to provide you with a full list of the PPL.
Representative Myers, are you done? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Assistant Commissioner Kudelka. Back to the capital assets program. I'm just going to want a little clarification. There's a project in Scott and Dakota County doing jointly for a household hazardous recycling. Is that, are they utilizing the capital assistance program, or are they doing that on their own?
Who would like to take that question? Okay, Mr. Kudelka.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Correct. The legislature has funded the phase one of the Scott and Dakota County Household Hazardous Waste and Recycling Facility, and so they have the design and have land purchased. They are now waiting for additional funds to go through the process of actually building the facility. It is our number one priority in our priority listing because it is something that's been started and we would like to complete the project.
Representative Kosnick.
I'm so glad to be on this, representing Scott and Dakota County.
Okay, great. Next, we have Lead Lee. And before I go to Representative Lee, how much funding do we have left in PFA right now? Is there still untapped dollars, or are they all accounted for?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. I wonder if that is going to be part of what PFA will cover next week. I mean, yeah. Generally speaking, I know that we have received from the federal government the funding that we can and that we can match right now. So I think a big part of what is needed right now is going to be the match for those federal funding. But I'm putting my PFA colleague behind me on tap that you're going to ask that question.
We will ask that question when she's on deck next week.
Yeah.
All right. Lead Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Kadelka, so regarding the $8 million for the new program you're proposing, is that $8 million entirely for the Red Oaks neighborhood, or what is the cost for the Red Oaks neighborhood and what will be remaining for the program as a whole?
And who would like, Mr. Kadelka?
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Correct, that would be the first project, enough to cover the first project on our list, which is the Red Oaks Phase 2. And so that is an $8 million project total. $6 million is for the infrastructure to go in, which is bond eligible, and $2 million for what need to be cash for the actual laterals to the homes, because that's not bondable. There is additional projects in Gem Lake, Eastbrook Terrace in Anoka, and a number of manufactured home parks that we see on the horizon. Those are in various stages of feasibility studies and design, so we do have them prioritized based on the need. That does lead us to about a $30 to $40 million overall need in the program.
Lidley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to clarify, Commissioner Kadelka, so you said $6 million will be GO eligible and then $2 million will be general fund, but the request is $8 million in GO, and so is there a general fund request too with this that we're not seeing?
Commissioner Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, correct, the governor's bonding bill just has the GO piece on it. We'd be happy to work with the committee on the rest of the items needed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so just to make sure I'm hearing correctly, so when you were presenting the program first, you mentioned the lateral connections, and so that is the general fund eligible. That would be the general fund piece to the proposal that you guys have brought forward for us.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and committee members, correct. It's a connection between the home and the laterals, which, because it is on private property, does need to be cash and not bond eligible.
Lidley.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Last follow-up. So just more to the program as a whole, if we were to create this, when you mentioned deeper well drilling, so this will be for public wells and not for any private wells. Is that correct?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and committee members, this program does focus on private wells. The program envisioned would be a combination of general obligation dollars and cash. There are some situations where we are not able to provide treatment. On a private home, we would have to drill deeper, and that would need to be cash. We do not have projects like that yet on the priority list, but we do envision that into the future as we look at the needs of various programs.
Lidley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just more of a comment. So I really appreciate that. I think it will be helpful for us in the future if when you come before us or in the language that we actually see the differentiation between, you know, what's needed for private wells with general fund request and then what's for public for GO. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioners, I got a couple of questions. One, one of my colleagues isn't here and he's brought it up in different meetings, but the city of Hastings has some issues, and my 2 years of experience, which is nothing, but my advice to him keeps, you know, just keep beating on the drum, because if there's money in that fund and you have an issue, why isn't the money in that fund being used for that issue? And if we talk about it enough, maybe it will happen. I would hate to use bonding money to fix something that there's already funding available for it in that fund, but I know that's not part of this discussion. I just want to bring it up because it's gnawing at me every day. I just, like, seems like such a simple fix, but it's so complicated. But one of my questions for you is the, on the clean water infrastructure funding, do you do the scoring or does PFA do the scoring? Madam Chair.
Representative Scraba. Oh, or
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Representative, the MPCA does the scoring and ranking of wastewater and stormwater infrastructure projects. The Department of Health does the scoring and ranking for drinking water projects. And then the PFA uses those scored and ranked lists to make decisions about who receives the funding, and they manage all of the banking aspects of that funding.
Madam Chair. So you guys do the scoring and PFA, do they add anything to it? Do they get any other information that they use to help them make, you know, like fine-tune the decision or the numbers? Because every time we have someone come before us, we ask them, where are you on the list? Where are you in the score, the list? Do they do something additional? And that'll be next week, I realize, but thank you.
Commissioner Vander Bosch.
Yep, Madam Chair and Representative. So the scoring and ranking criteria is actually defined in rule. So it's actually very set and consistent from project to project in the way that we review and score and rank. The scoring criteria are really linked to the whole Clean Water State Revolving Fund is really linked to the Clean Water Act. And so the projects have to demonstrate some type of environmental benefit. It has to either clean up a pollution problem, it has to help a facility attain a permit limit that would restrict pollution flowing into lakes or rivers. So the scoring and ranking criteria really closely cleave to environmental benefit and a protection of public health. And so that's a huge part of how these projects are scored and ranked. Where I think the PFA really shows their innovation and creativity is in working with communities to come up with funding packages. And so, as I mentioned in my presentation, there's not only the State Revolving Fund, but there's also the Point Source Implementation Grant Fund, the WIF grant. There's also federal fund. There's other pots of federal fund. And so they are trying to, like, stretch the funding that they have available to cover as many projects as possible, as I'm sure PFA will talk to you about. And so they work with communities to try to package together different funding packages to stretch the money out as far as it can be.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. And one thing I want to make abundantly clear, that the process works fantastically, I believe. I'm former mayor of Ely. We've been part of all the MPCA, part of PFA, PSIG, all this stuff. We've utilized it. I understand how it works. And the only thing that I questioned was, you guys do the actual scoring. I thought PFA did the actual scoring. So you do the scoring. They take the scoring and then try to match different dollars with different programs. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. One other answer over there, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and Representative Scraba, we'd be happy to provide you with those scoring criteria that are in rule.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. I think unless anybody else have any questions? Representative Carroll?
No.
No? Okay. Would you like to make up a question? No?
How did you get to be so good as chair in such a short time?
I know. It's just a great team I have right here, all of you. One big team. All right. Well, I don't see any further questions, so thank you so much. Members, I just want to remind you about our fun extra credit tour that we're doing at the Xcel Energy Center next Monday when we're done with session. I will be getting an email out to you all, so you have that in your inbox, but I hope that you can make it. I'm sure it'll be exciting. I'm sure they're not asking for much money. And with that, our next meeting will be February 18th, and we have an exciting agenda planned. And so I think that we can adjourn our meeting.